This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
It is 17 minutes to six.
Dealing with relatives or loved ones that are difficult to deal with, I mean, we've all experienced those, is emotional work, or is it also emotional labour? Like if you're, you know, a flight attendant, maybe wait staff, funeral service directors, or even debt collecting includes emotional labour. Well, joining us now, Michael Walsh is Associate Professor in Social Sciences at the University of Canberra. Michael, welcome to Joy Drive.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michael, why does it matter that the distinction between emotional work and emotional labour are being increasingly blurred?
Well, I think it probably matters a little bit because it means that the, capacity for us to observe emotional labour in work contexts where we kind of have to do, you know, emotion work for a job, maybe is actually being conflated with other types of work that we do in the home. And it kind of doesn't actually show up, I suppose, the type of, you know, demands that it can have. Say, for example, if you're a flight attendant and you're working for 15 hours, putting on that smile as you go through the day, it's probably not the equivalent of what we do in the private sphere.
Michael, what is the difference between emotional work and emotional labour?
Well, really, I guess, you know, we turn to Arlie Hochschild, who was the sociologist who kind of really worked on this concept. And she says actually that emotional labour is the kind of process where we do it for a formal wage. So it's the emotional work that we might have done in private, but actually transferred into the kind of public or commercial context. So the example that she uses, of course, is the classic of the flight attendant, but as we've also mentioned, the debt collector, the maitre d' at a restaurant that maybe, you know, has to put on that air of kind of refinement, or, the person who has to kind of manage a funeral and the kind of public mourning that might go along with that. So it's quite important, I think, that that kind of labour is actually acknowledged in the formal work sense. But that's not to kind of deny the type of work that we do in private as well, and that often, I think, historically, and even perhaps even today, hasn't been acknowledged as types of work either. So it's an interesting kind of conceptual distinction.
So essentially, emotional work is just, you know, family, friends, et cetera, just work in the sense that it's, you know, tiresome. But when you think mm-hmm. about emotional labour, that's because it's your job.
The formal kind of act of putting your money down in exchange for the things that you do.
Yeah. Michael, do we tend to recognise emotional labour, or is it just accepted that if you're in one of those professions that you just mentioned, that can be quite difficult, it's just part of the job of dealing with highly demanding and difficult people?
So I actually think one of the really good things about the book that this kind of concept is based on is that it actually identified that this was a thing that people did in their work. And up until that point, and the book was actually published in the early 80s, but up until that point, this type of labour wasn't something that was acknowledged as being something that people have to deal with and manage and actually have to adjust in their private lives as well. People that work in kind of high impact emotion labour contexts actually, you know, talk about, you know, not being able to come down after their work in terms of actually adjusting to, you know, what their emotional demands might be in private contexts. So there's a really interesting actually case study where she, Harley Hochschild talks about flight attendants having their smiles, you know, on them, but not of them, right? So that idea of the emotions that they were feeling actually weren't their own, even though they had to put them on their own faces in a way.
We're chatting with Associate Professor in Social Sciences at the University of Canberra, Michael James Walsh, about emotional labour. Michael, what are some other problems that can arise for people doing these jobs that have, you know, high levels of emotional labour?
So I think what happens, or what can happen at the very least, is that there's obviously a kind of tax that happens when you are constantly having to use your emotions in a commercial context, to kind of, I guess, get an outcome that is preferable to your job or your role. So, you know, pacifying the disagreeable kind of passenger in a flight context, or kind of, you know, not being able to kind of achieve extracting you know, say, for instance, for the bill collector, being able to kind of get the money that you need from that context. And I think in some respects, what happens is people tend to separate out themselves from their own occupations, and they might feel somewhat cynical or removed from their own kind of experiences to their job. And that's kind of a way in which they protect themselves, and their sense of self. So they don't take on all of the emotional burden that their job might actually require them to do in that context.
Do you think companies would be resisting to adopt the term emotional labour because, you know, potentially there could be some sort of, wage increase to compensate for the emotional labour?
I do tend to think that, yeah, this is a type of labour that isn't acknowledged as much as it probably should be. I think as a consequence, we tend not to kind of talk about this concept in, I think, real, like, formal labour negotiation contexts. But it's something that actually does, you know, tax the worker and something that requires actually, you know, in order for your workers not to burn out and kind of be subject to situations that are really probably a bridge too far in terms of their emotional well-being. It is actually something that's acknowledged. But again, with the rise of the service sector, these jobs are probably going to become somewhat more frequent, dare I say. And so the question of how we manage that is a really important one.
I wonder if the pandemic and, you know, many of us having to work from home and the lines between work and personal life, and then I suppose, you know, the emotional toll that that happens, I wonder whether that's helped blur the terms emotional labour and emotional work more.
I wouldn't be surprised, actually. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think there is definitely a blurring between the public and private. You know, you only have to think of all of the examples of people adopting, you know, in some sectors at the very least, online meetings and seeing into other people's homes and kind of how that gets managed or doesn't get managed very well is an open question. And there's also studies that suggest that people that work from home tend to do a lot more work, and there's usually a burst of activity that happens after the kids go to bed, and you know that wouldn't be available to employers if they were in the office.
Absolutely. Michael, we mentioned the, you know, strain that emotional labour can have on people that work these kinds of jobs. Would it be satisfactory and a good solution to potentially actually pay people more for these emotionally taxing jobs?
Well, I think there should be a remuneration associated with it. And I think there is maybe to some extent, but the question is to what extent is it actually managed? Is it actually built into people's, you know, employment agreements?
Right.
And to the extent that it's actually formally acknowledged. I do think there's definitely scope to have this much more kind of clarified in people's employment agreements. And you only have to think about the experiences of what's happening in airline industry today in Australia to know that these are very stressful situations at the best of times. Yeah, definitely, I think, requires more consideration.
And I imagine, too, that could not only financial but also availability of support would help as well.
Absolutely, yep, without a doubt.
Michael, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us on Joy Drive.
No problem. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael Walsh, Associate Professor of Social Sciences from the University of Canberra.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are, you can always take Em and Warren with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.